Okay, y'all. So Joan Didion, born 1934, died 2021, is an American writer, a U.S. American writer, mostly from California. So she's a West Coaster. And, you know, there's some ways in which she's a bit of a conservative. What she's known for, I mean, she wrote all the way up through the 20-teens, but she is known for being somebody who wrote a series of essays in the 1960s called Slouching Toward Bethlehem. And that is a line in a poem called The Second Coming. Who wrote The Second Coming? Let me see real quick. The Second Coming is a poem by William Butler Yeats. And so she took the last line of that poem and made it the title of her collection of poems. So what she did in this collection of essays that she wrote in the 1960s was kind of document the counterculture. So the 1960s in the United States being a period of revolt against against the conservatism of the 50s and 40s, a revolt against the militarism of the Cold War, eventually a revolt against the Vietnam War, etc. Also a lot of experimentation with sex and drugs and all sorts of things. And so more than anything, Joan Didion in that period was a chronicler, someone who kind of documented. She went interviewed a lot of people, including, you know, people who were experimenting on LSD and other drugs in San Francisco in the Haight-Ashbury district. And she wrote a series of really beautiful essays. The essay that we read for today, 7,000 Romaine, Los Angeles, 36, is not one of her more known essays. And it was originally published in the Saturday Evening Post in 1967 under the title The Howard Hughes Underground. Howard Hughes was, in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, a kind of a business tycoon. And I love this piece. I'm a huge Joan Didion fan. And when I read this piece, just to get personal for a minute, when I read this piece in 2014, 2013, for the first time, maybe, I mean, I know I was assigned this book in college at some point, Slouching Towards Bethlehem, and so I was probably supposed to read this essay way back in the 90s and probably did not. But when Donald Trump was elected president of the United States in 2016, this was the essay that helped me understand some kind of key reasons why Donald Trump was so successful in the United States. But, you know, of course, importantly, in 1967, when Joan Didion wrote this essay about Howard Hughes, Donald Trump was not around. So this is an essay about a completely different business tycoon. And what she does in this essay, it's so beautifully constructed. She starts us in medias res, so like starting in the middle of things with this kind of picture, this image of this building in Los Angeles, where she writes, 7,000 Romaine Street is in that part of Los Angeles familiar to admirers of Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett. The underside of Hollywood, south of Sunset Boulevard, a middle-class slum of model studios and warehouses and two-family bungalows. Because Paramount and Columbia and Desilu and the Samuel Goldwyn studios are nearby, many of the people who live around here have some tenuous connection with the motion picture industry. So this is the opening. So Joan Didion does not tell us in this first paragraph why she's writing this essay or what it's really about. She's just kind of giving us an image of something, and it's just of a certain, you know, kind of a portrait of a certain rundown neighborhood in Los Angeles. Los Angeles being, at that time, kind of the seat of a certain kind of American power, cultural power, you know, the movies, the film industry, et cetera, some glitz and glam, right? But this is a neighborhood that is not benefiting from that glitz and glam. It's kind of the cast off detritus of that glitz and glam. Anyway, this is where the communications center for the Howard Hughes company is. And so she kind of starts with that address, 7000 Romaine Street, and says what it looks like. And she says, you know, 7000 Romaine looks itself like a faded movie exterior, a pastel building with chipped Art Moderne detailing. The windows now either boarded or paned with chicken wire glass. And at the entrance, among the dusty oleander, a rubber mat that reads, "Welcome." Actually, no one is welcome, for 7000 Romaine belongs to Howard Hughes and the door is locked. Now, this is interesting. This is interesting because we don't know what this essay is about yet, but this welcome mat is kind of an interesting image because it ends up characterizing what it is that she says Americans love about Howard Hughes. So I would encourage you to really just see if you can enjoy this story. And it's, you know, it's about how Howard Hughes makes the news for making arbitrary decisions, kind of quixotic, strange decisions, talking in ways that feel irrational, feel like it's all about him making whatever decision he feels like on any given day. And so she goes through a lot of these stories that are just kind of this kind of shady figure of Howard Hughes just kind of making whatever decisions he feels like, just waking up and just doing it, right? And so it's anti-rational, it's anti-enlightenment, it's I want to do what I want to do, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to let you know, or I'm not going to let you know, but I'm just going to do it. And so this is how Joan Didion kind of lays out story after story about who Howard Hughes is and how Americans consume stories about him. And so on the bottom of page 58, this is where Joan Didion kind of launches into what the purpose of this essay is. And of course, the purpose is not to characterize Donald Trump because he's not around yet, right? But she's writing about Howard Hughes and she says, "Why do we like these stories so? Why do we tell them over and over? Why have we made a folk hero of a man who is the antithesis of all our official heroes, a haunted millionaire out of the West, trailing a legend of desperation and power and white sneakers? But then we have always done that. Our favorite people and our favorite stories become so not by any inherent virtue, but because they illustrate something deep in the grain, something unadmitted. Shoeless Joe Jackson, Warren Gamaliel Harding, the Titanic, How the Mighty Are Fallen, Charles Lindbergh, Scott and Zelda Fitzgerald, Marilyn Monroe, The Beautiful and the Damned, and Howard Hughes, that we have made a folk hero, that we have made a hero of Howard Hughes tells us something interesting about ourselves, something only dimly remembered. Tell us that the secret point of money and power in America is neither the things that money can buy nor power for power's sake. Americans are uneasy with their possessions, guilty about power, all of which is difficult for Europeans to perceive because they are themselves so truly materialistic, so versed in the uses of power. But rather, absolute personal freedom, mobility, and privacy. It is the instinct which drove America to the Pacific all through the 19th century, the desire to be able to find a restaurant open in case you want a sandwich, to be a free agent, live by one's own rules." Now this is, okay, so I read that whole paragraph. I think I'm actually going to read the whole final paragraph too. But what I just wanted to share that with you because what it is, what she's saying here is that it's not clear why Americans love the people that they do, and they tend not to. They tend to say they love certain people, but then they actually love others. So, there is a pressure, I think, a social pressure to say that we love those who represent social virtues. So that might be, I don't know, Martin Luther King Jr., or other kind of liberal or Enlightenment heroes of the late 20th century. But when it comes down to there's a fascination with the beautiful and the damned, or those who express some darker kind of vision of American values, and those values being personal freedom, mobility, and privacy, and definitely not, you know, Enlightenment or equality, etc. So this is Joan Didion talking, and this is not me. But I think what she's suggesting here, her thesis is that Americans say they love one kind of person, the kind of socially responsible, liberal, you know, egalitarian figure, but then they really go in for these kind of darker, arbitrary figures who have always insisted on their own personal freedom at all costs, like Howard Hughes, their own mobility, their own privacy. So I'm going to read the final paragraph, and then that'll be that. Of course, we do not admit this, and this is the important part, that her assertion in 1967 is that Americans don't fess up to the fascination with the darker side of figures like this. Of course, we do not admit that. The instinct is socially suicidal, and because we recognize that that this is so, we have developed workable ways of saying one thing and believing quite another. A long time ago, Lionel Trilling pointed out what he called the, quote, fatal separation between, quote, the ideas of our educated liberal class and the deep places of the imagination. I mean only, he wrote, that our educated class has a ready, if mild, suspiciousness of the profit motive, a belief in progress, science, social legislation, planning, and international cooperation. Those beliefs do great credit to those who hold them, yet it is a comment, if not on our beliefs, then on our way of holding them, that not a single first-rate writer has emerged to deal with these ideas and the emotions that are consonant with them in a great literary way. Okay, I'm going to stop there and then finish up in a second. But so what she's doing here is she's saying, look, here's one of the indicators that Americans say they believe in certain kinds of liberal social heroes, but actually are fascinated with the opposite, is that there isn't much American literature about liberalism. There isn't much, the stories, the novels tend to be about, you know, the darker side of things. So that's why she mentions Dashiell Hammett and Raymond Chandler at the beginning of the essay, because those are the writers who write, you know, noir fiction and detective fiction and fiction about violence and murder, etc. And that is something that fascinates Americans much more than do those who, as Lionel Trilling's essay, have a mild suspiciousness of the profit motive, a belief in progress, science, social legislation, planning, and international cooperation. Those are things that Americans have long said that they care about. You know, not being too much into profit. We believe in progress. We believe in science and social legislation and the social safety net and international cooperation across the globe. But what she's suggesting, relying on this other literary theorist named Lionel Trilling, is that what shows that that's probably not quite true about Americans is that nobody writes novels that extol and express these social center-left or leftist virtues. Whether that's true or not is a different question, but that's the evidence that she is calling forth here to make that point. Okay, here we go. Final paragraph, and then I'll let you go. Officially, we admire men who exemplify those ideas. We admire the Adlai Stevenson character, the rational man, the enlightened man, the man not dependent on the potentially psychopathic mode of action. Among rich men, we officially admire Paul Mellon, a socially responsible inheritor in the European mold. There has always been that divergence between our official and our unofficial heroes. It is impossible to think of Howard Hughes without seeing the apparently bottomless gulf between what we say we want and what we do want, between what we officially admire and secretly desire, between, in the largest sense, the people we marry and the people we love. And here's where she brings it home. In a nation which increasingly appears to prize social virtues, and by that she means enlightenment virtues, Howard Hughes remains not merely antisocial, but grandly, brilliantly, surpassingly asocial. He is the last private man, the dream we no longer admit. So that's where the essay ends. And the reason we're reading it this week along with Quinn Slobodian is that Quinn Slobodian has an argument, which you'll hear in the other lecture and when you read him, that suggests that culture, right, so the film industry, that culture and politics are being used by the new right as the sphere in which to influence and ensure the continued future proper working of the free market, which is the profit margin that John Didion is talking about above. And that when we look at some of these cultural figures and some of these kind of symbols and discourses that we have in society, a lot of those that appear to not be about economics per se, or about the free market, or about, you know, kind of corporate profits or anything like this, actually are designed so as to ensure a certain kind of economic system of the future. And so the pairing between John Didion and Slobodian, Quinn Slobodian, is to kind of emphasize this. So we've got this really powerful cultural symbol of Howard Hughes, and the kind of values that he expresses of individual freedom, privacy, and mobility over all else, right? Over all else, including, you know, equality, civil rights, all that kind of stuff. That those powerful cultural symbols are there and are promoted in a culture, you know, by what Slobodian calls the new fusionists of the new right, so as to ensure the successful continue working functioning of a particular kind of a political economy, a particular kind of economic system that serves their vested interests. So I really hope that you enjoy this essay by Joan Didion. I find her writing just really, really beautiful, and whether or not you agree with her thesis. So, you know, dive in, enjoy. It's only 4 pages long. The Slobodian reading is longer, but both of them are great writers, and I hope you enjoy.